You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Hey, folks. This episode is sponsored by Mack Weldon Underwear. With a smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping experience, Mack Weldon Underwear is definitely better than whatever you're wearing right now. They've got a huge selection. Are you a boxers or a brief man? Can't make up your mind? Well, they've got boxer briefs, and even long underwear, which comes in handy on these cold winter mornings. Besides looking and feeling great, all Mack Weldon products are crafted with natural fibers, and I'm all about that. Why? Because natural fibers breathe. They don't suffocate or itch like synthetic materials do. They have built-in performance capabilities, so they work just as hard as you do. In my case, probably harder. And they even have a line of silver underwear and shirts that are naturally antimicrobial, which means they eliminate odor. Science! All that, and they're shipped right to your door. If you don't like your first pair, you can keep it, and they'll still refund you, no questions asked. So what do you have to lose? And as a listener of Kick-Ass News, they'll even give you 20% off if you go to MackWeldon.com and enter the promo code KICKASS. That's MackWeldon.com. And the promo code KICKASS. Thanks for listening, and now enjoy the podcast.
In times of war or uncertainty,
there's a special breed of warrior
ready to answer our nation's call.
A common man with uncommon desire to succeed.
I am that man.
I humbly serve as a guardian to my fellow Americans.
Always ready to defend
those who are unable to defend themselves.
I serve with honor.
On and off the battlefield.
My character and honor are steadfast.
My word is my bond.
I lead by example.
In all situations,
I will never quit.
My nation expects me to be physically harder
and mentally stronger
than my enemies.
The lives of my teammates
and the success of our mission
depend on me.
Me. We train for war.
And we fight to win.
Brave men have fought and died, building the proud tradition and
feared reputation
that I am bound to uphold.
I will not fail.
I will not fail.
I will not fail.
That was the creed of the U.S. Navy SEALs, recited by the cast of History Channel's new dramatic series, Six, which follows the missions and struggles, both on the battlefield and at home, of the men in the military's most elite counterterrorism unit, called the United States Naval Special Warfare Development Group, or DEVGRU, but more popularly referred to as SEAL Team 6. Inspired by real missions, the series authentically captures the inside world of America's elite special operations unit, what the SEALs do, their personal lives, combat, and the life and death decisions they make to protect and serve their country. It stars Walton Goggins, Barry Sloan, Kyle Schmidt, Juan Pablo Raba, and Edwin Hodge, and it premieres on the History Channel this Wednesday, January 18th at 10 p.m. Eastern. Today I'll talk with the executive producers and creators of Six, the father and son team of William Broyles Jr. and David Broyles. Bill Broyles is the Academy Award-nominated screenwriter behind the TV series China Beach and films like Castaway, Apollo 13, Jarhead, and Flags of Our Fathers. His son David Broyles is also a writer and director and a military special operations veteran. They'll talk about their first time writing together on their new show, how their experience serving in the military influenced the series, and why SEAL Team 6 is a unit unlike any other and America's first line of defense against the worst of the worst. Then I'll talk with the stars of 6, Barry Sloan, Kyle Schmidt, and Edwin Hodge. Barry Sloan has had a popular career as an actor in the UK, and he's also no stranger to Americans, who'll recognize him from the ABC drama series Revenge and The Whispers, as well as the Nat Geo miniseries Saints and Strangers. Kyle Schmidt is well known for his lead role on BBC America's drama Copper, as well as Being Human, Lost Girl, Blood Ties, and films like The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, The Covenant, and The Pacifier. And Edwin Hodge is best known for his lead role as the Stranger in the blockbuster horror film The Purge, and his recurring role on the ABC drama series Secrets and Lies. They'll talk about the dangerous and secretive nature of SEAL Team 6's work, and how bottling that up inside can put a strain on SEAL's relationships back home. They'll talk about the psychological game of being a SEAL, the grueling physical training they had to go through at SEAL boot camp, and Edwin Hodge's determination not to perpetuate stereotypes about black men and swimming. Coming up with the cast and creators of History Channel's 6 in just a moment. I'm joined by the co-creators of History Channel's new dramatic series, 6, the father and son duo of William Broyles Jr. and David Broyles. David and Bill, thanks for joining me.
Oh, it's our pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
I'm curious, this is so unusual, I feel, a father-son writing team. Is this your first time collaborating?
Well, we've done projects before. This is the first one we've had on the air.
Okay.
And yeah, it was unusual. I've grown up in kind of around the business, as it were, and grew up on the set of China Beach with Bill.
Right.
And, you know, I knew from the beginning I really wanted to be a part of what I thought was the family business. And I joke with Bill, you know, it could be Broyles and Son Plumbing, which it kind of feels like sometimes.
Sometimes it does.
And we've worked before, but never to this extent under these conditions and kind of really through the whole process. And I didn't know really what to expect, but I think it's fair to say we started, you know, as father and son, but ended up really as colleagues and collaborators. And it wasn't without a few bumps along the way, but.
Yeah. What is that like? I mean, you know, is dad like, well, this, you know, I think this character needs more arc. And, you know, you're like, you know, just let me live my life, dad.
That's exactly.
I can do this.
Yeah. No. It was just a collaborative process. I think we respect each other's backgrounds and our experience and our writing abilities. Mm-hmm. And it was really a great process to work with him along with our other fantastic creative writing team.
And you mentioned China Beach. Bill, you've worked on a number of military subjects for film and television, Flags of Our Fathers, Jarheads, and of course, China Beach. You were co-creator of that. What is your fascination with the military? Why is that a well that you keep wanting to draw on?
Well, I found myself in the military in Vietnam, not by intention. And those 4 years that I was in the Marine Corps really shaped a lot of my life. And the one thing I said to David, I said, look, son, you know, I'll support you with whatever you want to do, but just please don't do two things, join the military and go into the film business. And, of course, he did absolutely both of them. But, no, I think that those are stories that by definition are universal. I mean, our first great piece of literature is the Iliad. You get to see people under really difficult conditions and like putting them under a Bunsen burner and see what they're made of. And I think these themes are enduring and timeless. But also, I was in Vietnam as a Marine, but when David went in after 9/11, I was on the other side. That is, I was the family member who stayed home.
Mm-hmm.
And that was such an eye-opener to me, the things that people who love have a loved one in combat or in war go through was part of my personal motivation for doing this show, much more than my Vietnam experience. Because, you know, he was deployed in Iraq and Afghanistan and Djibouti, wherever he was. I really couldn't answer the phone or watch TV, or I had a little cabin, and when a car came up the road, I would go hide in the woods. You know, it's
wow,
it's intense, and that's happening right now to people.
In
that are like the characters and the families that we have in our show.
Yeah, and that seems to be a big aspect of Six, is showing the people who are left behind on the home front and the toll that this takes on those relationships. Talk a little bit more about that, what these guys go through when they come back home.
Well,
that was always from the beginning what we wanted to do with the show is, you know, I think we've seen the SEALs in action in film and TV, where we get to see their missions and we get to see the amazing things they do on the job. But what we haven't seen is what happens when they come home. And one of our main goals from the beginning was to really humanize these guys, because they're often portrayed as superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I found serving myself and working with these guys on the job is that that's not necessarily true. They're actually humans that have fears and that make mistakes, and, you know, yet they do this incredible job under the most incredible circumstances. So for us, if we were going to tell this show about these people, it would do them a disservice if we just showed the missions, because that is just one side of their lives.
Yeah, and if I have this right, you served in Special Forces. Is that something you can talk about? What group were you with?
Sure. I served in Special Operations. It was the Air Force Pararescue, and their mission is to save lives. They're combat search and rescue specialists, and they work with SEALs and Special Forces, and they work on their own. And I signed up after 9/11. I wanted to be a part of something bigger than myself. I wanted to do something after watching the towers come down, and I wanted to test myself. You know, I wanted to be a part of the best, and so I went out there, and it was an incredible, challenging experience, both the training that lasted almost 2 years, and then I was deployed in support of Operation Enduring and Iraqi Freedom. And the big thing that I took away from it was the brotherhood. I mean, mm-hmm. The bond between my teammates was of the most unbreakable stuff on earth.
Mm-hmm.
And, these guys might not necessarily be the guys that you would, you know, hang out with outside of the military. They come from very different backgrounds, but they come together to be a part of just this amazing, unbreakable team. And that's one of the things that was really important for us to show in the series, was that brotherhood. And, you know, I'm sure you're going to talk about it with the cast, but the way we got there really quickly was putting them through a very intense boot camp. And, you know, because I found the quickest way to bond between people is shared suffering. So we made them suffer.
What else did you recognize in this series from your experiences?
Well, you know, it was about the dedication and about the service. And as you've mentioned, it isn't just the SEAL team. It's their families at home. It's also the other characters in our series. It all comes back to family. I mean, mm-hmm. In the end, you know, we all are motivated by these very human needs. And so it is a show about family above all else. And that's one thing we wanted to show from the start.
And I have to give you credit. The series does seem very authentic to me. Who were some of the consultants that you worked with on the show?
Well, we worked with Mitch Hall, who had been in SEAL Team 6, and a couple of colleagues of his who were in SEAL Team 6. Mitch did Zero Dark 30 and some other things, but they were terrific. They were on the set every minute. They, not only with the shooting, but in the script stage, with stories, with wardrobe, with props, with armor, with editing, with sound. Everything was run through the ringer of their authenticity. And these guys, you can't use off-the-rack stuff. I mean, everything they use is special. You can't just go down to the store. You know, every piece of gear, every weapon is specialized to them. So that became a huge prop issue, and because we wanted to do it all right, you can't, you know, and we made it as real as we possibly could. We also talked to wives and who'd been these guys are tough to live with.
Yeah.
it's, you know, they go out and take down Bin Laden and then come home and you want them to take out the garbage.
Yeah.
And or go to pick up your, you know, the daughter at school, and they want to. They desperately want to be good fathers and good husbands, but the nature of their warrior life and their warrior family and the values and codes it has are not necessarily compatible with living a decent civilian life.
Yeah.
And so there's always that struggle, and that's in that struggle is where the show is, really.
I wonder, as filmmakers, you're dealing with a subject matter like SEAL Team 6, where so much of their tactics, their missions, and so forth is classified. Does that make it difficult for you when you're trying to get it right and as close to realistic as possible?
It is. It's a constant thing we're working with. I mean, we want to have the appearance of reality, and we want it to feel authentic. But we also are very cognizant of the fact that there are operators in the field doing the job right now.
Yeah.
And they have been, you know, they've been in combat for 15 years. They've been, and so we didn't want to compromise them in any way. You know, SEAL Team 6 missions are classified.
Yeah.
This is kind of inspired by who they are and what they do. But we didn't want to cross that line into compromising them at all. And so, you know, we did what we could for it to be as real as possible in a television dramatic series.
Mm-hmm. And of course, while we're talking about authenticity and details, I do have one technical detail to point out. I'm sure that you two are already aware of this. At least in name, SEAL Team 6 hasn't actually existed in 30 years, right? They only existed for 8 years, from 1979 to 1987, before they disbanded and they reformed as the Naval Special Warfare Development Group, or DEVGRU. And yet everyone still seems to call them the Navy SEALs.
Right. Well, you know, they are pretty much everybody in DEVGRU or SEAL Team 6. It's a very colorful and amazing history.
It's
really worth looking up. But they come from the Navy SEAL teams.
Yeah.
DEVGRU are, it's like the top 5% of Navy SEALs come into this unit, which is of a different level of the other SEAL teams, where it's
I wonder, do you guys have any idea why they disbanded? That seems to be something of a mystery, why they disbanded in 1986,
more paper.
Oh, really?
Disbanding than reality.
Interesting.
You know, one of the things that Mitch told us is that, I forget what operation it was, that someone said the SEAL Team 6. He said, I had no idea that's who we were. You know, they because it was so secret.
Yeah.
And part of this that makes this interesting is that these guys have been coming out of the shadows in the past few years, but their ethic is still one of secrecy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a fraternity that they have that's really deep. And, you know, there are things that they do that aren't necessarily classified operationally, but just culturally that they're also very protective of. But, you know, the fun thing about this is, and I'm saying fun and advisedly, because what these guys do is live on the edge of life and death, is that they love what they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we talk about the conflicts they have and with their life and the cost of it and what it does to be out there, you know, essentially playing NBA Game 7, where instead of going home, the loser gets killed.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you watch your friends, you know, it's tough. It's an intense, but they wouldn't do anything else. And part of this show is about, it's kind of like Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
You know, that he may have lost a step.
Yeah.
But he can still, you know, play. But there's someone coming up younger, faster, stronger.
Yeah.
And that's another dynamic of the show, is how do they keep doing what they love to do and still not jeopardize their teammates if they lose a step.
Yeah, and you cover a lot of locations in this show, Afghanistan, West Africa, Dubai, the U.S. Where did you shoot the show?
We shot primarily in Wilmington, North Carolina.
Really?
Yeah.
Even the scenes that are supposed to be in Africa and Afghanistan.
We shot LA as well.
Shot just some Afghanistan. 3 days in LA, and then the rest was all Wilmington.
I had no idea it was such diverse terrain in Wilmington,
there's a
North Carolina.
Looks like that, but you know, we also adapt to Clint Eastwood because he built the American Sniper setup in Santa Clarita, so we were able to use that for some of the opening.
What do you guys want audiences to take away from this show?
I think the big thing is to see these guys as human beings doing an incredible job, and to really humanize them and normalize them as soldiers, as veterans, and as husbands and brothers and everything in between. That's the big thing for me.
Yeah.
And I think also that some of the things they do are imperfect, and they make mistakes, and they cross the line sometimes. But it's also important, and we want, is that they're there because we sent them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are all part of what they do. And that intimacy and authenticity of them as us, you know, they are the guy we might be seeing in the checkout line.
Yeah.
Or at the Little League game.
Yeah.
And they do these extraordinary things, and the cost of them is not free. Yeah. You don't do the kind of things they do and not come away unaffected, unscathed, and your families too.
Yeah.
And so we owe them a great debt. We want that to be clear, but we also are asking them to do some really difficult things.
Yeah.
Because it's been a very confusing war for the last 15 years, and the people that have had to fight it and their families have been through a lot.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, Bill and David Broyles, I enjoyed Six. Thank you both for your service, and thanks for sitting down to talk with me.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break right now. Then I'll talk to the stars of Six, Barry Sloan, Kyle Schmidt, and Edwin Hodge, when we come back in just a minute. The 2016 election is now in the history books, but I know there are a lot of folks out there who are still feeling the burn. Well, guess what? Bernie Sanders has a new book that's now 7 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list called Our Revolution, A Future to Believe In. You might remember when Bernie Sanders began his race for the presidency, it was considered by the political establishment and the media to be a fringe campaign, something not to be taken seriously. But by the time Sanders' campaign came to a close, whether you were on the right or left, you could not deny that Bernie had run one of the most consequential campaigns in modern history. And though the campaign is over, Bernie isn't going anywhere. Because for Bernie Sanders, the political revolution has just begun. You can follow along as Bernie Sanders seeks to keep the new administration in check and lays out his vision of a progressive future in his new multi-month New York Times bestseller, Our Revolution, A Future to Believe In. Referring to his book, The Washington Post says that Sanders is spinning lessons about what really matters in life. Go behind the scenes to learn the details of Sanders' historic primary fight and the people who made it possible in Our Revolution. Available in hardcover, ebook, and wherever books are sold, with an audiobook read by Bernie Sanders himself and Mark Ruffalo. For more information, visit OurRevolutionBook.com and hashtag ReadTheBurn. Again, that's OurRevolutionBook.com. Folks, I'm sure I don't have to tell you, when you're constantly on the go, life gets chaotic. You're working late, go to the gym, get the dry cleaning, it never ends. And I just don't have the time to be running back and forth to the grocery store. That's why Home Chef is my new best friend. Home Chef offers delicious, easy-to-prepare meals delivered straight to my door. There's no headaches or hassles. Home Chef is for busy professionals like you and I that love a tasty meal but don't have all the time to plan and prep. With Home Chef, I get to cook like a 5-star chef whenever I want. And anyone will tell you I am definitely no 5-star chef. Their mouth-watering meals and pre-portioned ingredients are so easy to prepare, it only takes 30 minutes. And that gives me more time to relax after surviving another crazy busy day. Just the other night, I made Home Chef's pork chop Chateaubriand with Duchess potatoes and roasted carrots. I was literally shocked at what I was capable of with Home Chef. It tasted fantastic. The veggies and meat were fresh, perfectly seasoned. It was as good or better than anything I've had in a restaurant recently. Some of the other options that are tempting me from next week's menu include Parisian bistro steak with dauphinoise potatoes and green beans, blue cheese quinoa arugula salad with candied walnuts and dried apricots, and how about steelhead trout niçoise with warm potatoes and spinach salad. With over 13 dinner options and new breakfasts that rotate each week, Home Chef has something to delight everyone. Home Chef's weekly meal delivery system fits my crazy schedule, and that's why I keep coming back. Craft a delicious meal that you're guaranteed to go wild for. And if you go to homechef.com/kickass right now, you'll get $30 in free meals. That's homechef.com/kickass for $30 in free meals. Do yourself a favor, make your life easier and more delicious. Go to homechef.com/kickass. And now, back to the podcast. I'm joined by Barry Sloan, Kyle Schmidt, and Edwin Hodge, who play Bear, Calder, and Chase, a team of Navy SEALs in Six. Guys, this looked pretty grueling. Thanks for joining me. How was
it? Thank you for having us. It was grueling.
Yeah, it was very grueling.
It's a lot easier being here, yeah, let me tell you.
First of all, I'm curious, have any of you served in the military, or was this a fresh experience for all of you?
This, I mean, I'll speak as the British man at the table. It was nothing that I'd ever experienced before, which was exactly the reason why I was attracted to the role. It's a test of who you are as a human being, whether you can go through the train that we may speak about later on. But, you know, to embody these men and what they do for a living, to experience that from a safe distance and try that out was the main thing I wanted to do. It was amazing.
Edwin and Kyle, you guys didn't have any prior military experience either, right?
No, I'm the product of two Marines, so as far as a military background, I, by association, I know some things. But no personal experience. Yeah. I have done some projects where there was military training, weaponry training, but nothing as extensive as this one. This was absolutely an intense, grueling 4 days of, you know, testing our will, testing our own patience, testing our strength, our endurance. And we had to seriously rely on each of us to kind of pick each other up.
What kind of boot camp did you guys have to go through for this film?
It was something called SEAL Fit out of Encinitas, California. And it's basically a prep class, a prep course that young men and women can take to see if they have what it would take to join BUDS. And it is not a joke, man. It is the most difficult thing I have ever done in my life.
I concur.
And
you got a fraction of that too.
I learned so much. It was a learning experience about our physical limitations, our mental limitations, our psychological limitations, and they're out there to break you. Yeah. And they're doing it, believe it or not, for your own good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you can't take it, you shouldn't be putting yourself in positions that can potentially harm other people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so what I could take away from that was so much, not just myself, but a brotherhood with these two gentlemen beside me. And a brotherhood with three guys that we're missing right now, who we love and adore and wish they were here. But, you know, I think, Barry, you said this before, and I'm sure you agree. Like, I'm better friends with you guys than I am with people that I've known for 20 years.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Because when you've seen somebody break, genuinely, and you've seen their breaking points, and you know exactly who they are intrinsically, you know that it's not a facade.
Exactly.
You know who this is. I know where your strengths is. I know where your weaknesses are. And you know where mine are, and you helped me get through them. Yeah. And I helped you get through yours.
Yeah.
That is when you've formed a bond that is unlike any other.
Yeah. Now, at any point, did any of you want to just call up your agents and say, get me the hell out of
hell
here.
Yeah.
Get me out of here. Whatever it takes.
Yeah, second you know, day. You know, that was the whole point. They wanted us to go.
Yeah.
And absolutely that happened.
Oh, and you signed an NDA that says if you die here, literally, if you die, we take no responsibility.
To no responsibility.
Jeez.
Yeah.
My agent called me, was just like, hey, you should, they've sent this thing to me.
It'll probably be an actor's thing.
It's probably a thing, like, you don't have to sign it. Like, maybe we can get away with it. And I was like, I don't know if I'm willing to potentially give this project up.
Yeah.
Just for that. I mean, not to mention, it looked like fun at the time. Yeah. It was hell.
Yeah, where's the union when you need it?
That's a good question.
Any open coming actors, check the definition of boot camp, when it's put in it. No, this was, we're very thankful for it, in all honesty.
Barry and I, when we talked to our lead tech advisor, Mitch Hall, we had a conversation, a conference call, and I just remember hearing kind of like the fear coming out of Barry, and it was coming out of myself as well. And mind you, we had not talked to each other prior to this, but he hits me up maybe 15 seconds after we got off the phone call. He's like, yo, what the hell did we get ourselves into? I just texted back. I'm like, brother, I don't know. So, that's how it started.
Yeah. And was Mitch the guy who kind of prescribed
he was the evil genius behind it all.
What's he like?
You know what,
he's a cold-hearted killer.
He doesn't smile a lot, but you see the joy in his face. Absolutely. When he sees us going to
if you get it, you know, he's like that strict father, I suppose. If you get any compliment from him during the entire course of the season, it's to be cherished and put in a little box on your mantle. You know what I mean?
Hold it dearly, because he doesn't say much.
Yeah. But if you fuck up, you hear straight away.
You look like a dumbass.
Yeah. Stop that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it looks like it must have been pretty physically grueling. On the show, you guys talk a lot about the psychological aspect of it. Mm-hmm. Phrases like, does this guy have his head screwed on right now? And being focused and all that. Is the psychological game of being a SEAL just as important as the physical training?
If not more important.
It's more important.
Yeah, it's more important.
Yeah, it's definitely more important.
You have to be, one second, you have to be a physical specimen to get through it. That's without question. You have to be able to do a certain degree of physical activity to become a SEAL. What differentiates you from that group to that group is how you handle that mentally.
Yeah.
Simple.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and one thing that I like about this series that I was just talking about with David and Bill is it explores the home life of the SEALs and the difficulties of being able to take off to wherever and kill a man and then come back and be dad again and not lose yourself. Particularly Barry, since you play the team leader who also happens to be a husband and a father in this show, talk about the toll that this job takes on the loved ones and the relationships in these guys' lives.
Well, I think that's one of the things I enjoyed most about playing this character was remembering which hat to put on before you walk in the door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the responsibility that lies on Joe to literally hold his brother's lives in his hands with the decision he makes, some of the nation's lives in his hands with the decision he makes. And when he goes home, he has to know where to put that experience that he's just gone through. Somewhere, either in his head or when he goes shooting or when he goes fishing, whatever it is, to put it in a place and hope that it doesn't come knocking too early. And something that's interesting about his journey is in I think it's episode 3 of the show, you know, he's looking to his father figure for answers and demands answers about what to do with it, and he's told to just fucking bury it. Mm-hmm. Just fucking bury it, man. Just fucking bury it.
It's a powerful scene.
And in that scene, he is given a terminal disease right there.
Yeah.
Through love, through care, through compassion, through wanting to give you my experience of how it works. But he infects him with a disease right there. And Joe lives his life by that. And it's traumatic.
And aside from the personal trade-offs of being a SEAL, maybe being away from your family, having to take off in a moment's notice, certainly there's some degree of PTSD, I'm sure. One thing that I've also talked about with people who work in intelligence is this added burden of the secrecy, because these are missions and tactics of this group that are covert and classified. It must take an enormous toll on the personal relationships of these guys when there's an entire aspect of their life, maybe probably the biggest aspect of their life, and your spouse, your parents, your kids, your friends can never even really know that side of you.
You're two different people.
To
the ones who truly love you, you are two different people, and there's no way of actually getting past that. Mm-hmm. they are sworn to secrecy, and they hold the value of that secrecy very dearly to their hearts. And to go home and be able to look your son or daughter or your wife in the face, your husband in the face, and not tell them the deepest part of your life, like,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, we should be able to share that.
And also things like not being like if your kid was in school, say was being bullied, and how can you quite honestly sit down and say the violence isn't the answer?
Yeah,
that
too. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of lying goes on.
A lot of lying.
Please. Sorry,
I jumped. Yeah, and I imagine that it also though brings these guys together. The fact that they can't share this with anyone else, and they're really probably the only people who really know each other to that deep level.
They know each other more or even better than their family does.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you really sit down and look at it, you know, we experience, or should I say, they experience each other's family lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they're away, they still have the pictures of their baby, their wives, and so they do get a glimpse into that. But at the same time, it is kind of the job of the SEAL to negate that part of their lives at this very given moment so that they can concentrate on their brothers and the mission. You know, and it just
I respect your family life, but I don't need your family life with us right now.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
You know, you can't take your personal life into battle.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably what defines Calder as being Calder.
I was going to say that. Yeah. Because
he is detached from his kind of nuclear family, and he made that choice.
Smart choice.
Ideally, for the benefit of his brothers.
Yeah.
You know, he is that guy who goes around the corner first. He's the point man, and to stick your neck out, day in, day out, mission after mission. It's because he loves his brothers. It's because he loves his country, and because he believes in what he does.
Mm-hmm. He's already dead.
And he's essentially like you do that often enough, you feel like you've gotten away with murder.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of detach yourself from all of it.
Yeah.
And it just becomes a ride.
And emotionally, he dies.
He's an adrenaline junkie.
Yeah. And Kyle, you know, your character Calder is one who doesn't really form many attachments. He has a strained relationship with his own daughter. As lonely as that existence is, do you think that that's perhaps the kind of person who's best suited for a job like this?
You'd have to ask the guys, the real guys. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, it suits Calder.
Yeah.
With regards to Juan Pablo's character, Buddha, that's what keeps him strong is his family.
His family, exactly.
Yeah.
Everybody will tell you something different because everybody is a different human being, and this show isn't out there to try and tell people exactly what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
It's just to give them a glimpse
into
how difficult it is for these men and women who go out and sacrifice so much of their own lives, their family lives, the sacrifices that those mothers and wives make for them and for their country. And hopefully they get to see a little bit more. And I think the action's amazing with the show, but you know, ultimately that nitty gritty, that heart-wrenching stuff is when you get home.
And Edwin, you play the newbie on the team.
Yeah.
You know, when you have a SEAL Team 6, it's such a tight unit.
Yeah.
Is it really hard to fit in with that group and to be accepted by that group? Were they extra hard on you?
Well, I figure it's like any friendship or bond. I mean, if I come into your circle, you know, I have to try to acclimate myself to those who are around you.
Right, but whether you die or live isn't hinging on that friendship.
But it is the... The growth process, you know, the learning process, it is, you know, earning the respect. You have to earn that respect. There is no, oh, you're on our team, okay, we're buddy-buddy. No, it's you're on our team, we're going to make your ass work hard for this position. Mm-hmm. You know, you earn the right to be a SEAL member.
Yeah.
So for my character, you know, he comes in with that attitude. Listen, I want to be the best. Mm-hmm. I don't want to mess up. And when I do, you just let me know what I do and I will fix it. You know, so we all need to learn something new every day, and we all do learn something new every day. Yeah. And I like the fact that this character takes that in and pretty much just his evolution. I think it was beautifully written. Everybody's evolution is beautifully written. But, you know, my issues with my parents and things of that nature, you know, he is an everyday man. He's somebody that people can relate to.
Now, when you went into boot camp, did they haze you a little extra since you were supposed to be playing the new guy?
Oh, man. Boot camp. I'll tell you my favorite story from boot camp.
Seal fit, real life boot camp.
I'll tell you one of my favorite stories. So I'm not the greatest swimmer, and the very first day.
So this was a stretch.
Oh, this is a huge stretch.
Okay.
So the very first day.
That's a really beautifully way to put it.
You know,
you're already reinforcing every bad stereotype
about.
No!
You have even waited for this.
Wait, it's coming.
Oh, whoa.
Coming. Okay. So we get to the pool or whatever, and they're like, "All right, we're gonna dump you in there. 5 minutes, you're gonna wait." And I'm like, all right, fine, whatever. I didn't make the choice. They pushed me in, right? So I'm in there. I'm struggling. I'm trying to get to the side and hold on. They keep pushing me back in. All right, boom, whatever. We're going to do a 500-meter swim. The pool's only 25 meters across. So I'm like, there's no way that I'm going to do that. So I get like maybe 75% across in my first lap, and I'm like, you know what? I'm done. I can't do this, right? So I get over to the diving board, and I'm hanging on to it. Coach Tree, he's about 6'3". About a good solid 230.
Bad motherfucker.
Bad dude. Heavy gunner. Also African American. He comes over to me. He shares a little bit of his life story. He didn't start learning how to swim until he wanted to become a SEAL, and that was at the age of 30. So I'm sitting here 31. He's like, "Hey." I'm like, "What's up?" He goes, "You know what they say about black people?" I'm like, "That we can't swim, coach." He's like, "You want to perpetuate the stereotype of a black man?" I said, "No, coach." He's like, "Get your ass out there and swim." I'm like, "Oh, shit." So, you know, I get out there, whatever. But one of our other coaches, he takes me aside to do this drill where I actually have to take a deep breath, exhale on the way down, and then walk across the bottom of the pool for a couple of steps. I failed the first two times. I accomplished it the next two. Tried to do it the third. Coach Tree comes back over. He's like, "Hey," Coach Cummins is like, "I saw him. He did it, man. He walked across the bottom of the pool." Coach Tree was like, "I didn't see it." I said, "This son of a man."
Also, what should be noted as on top of that is the next day, Ed runs out into the ocean, swims under waves, and comes back in. This is
like a
this
real
is
seal.
The next day. It was like, legit. Go out and do surf passage.
Surf passage. Yeah.
Oh my god!
Like, you've been in a swimming pool now, so now get in the fucking ocean.
I had a boxing match,
and he did it without question. Just went out.
Yeah, like, it was fun though.
Damn,
I'm gonna call it a draw.
You guys are better men than me. Well, before we go, I don't want to leave out your cast member, Walton Goggins, who plays the team leader who trained you guys.
Walton motherfucking Goggins.
And then later, you guys have to rescue him from Boko Haram.
Yep.
Yeah. What was Walton Goggins like? Did you guys make him do his Mr. Russell impression from Vice Principals? Gamby.
The thing is, Walt walked in.
He definitely ran like him when he first showed
up.
Yeah,
he got broken. Because by that point, we'd kind of passed our test, if you will, so the SEALs were being a little nicer to us, but he was not getting nice.
Imagine walking into a group of guys that had already been through it.
That guy can shoot. He's got good guns. Yeah, absolutely.
But he's super, super intense in the most pleasant way.
He had our respect as an actor, without question. So he already had that. He just had to.
Definitely an actor's actor. I mean, he pushed us in
generous,
very generous.
Us to, you know, give him the juice so that he can be pushed too. So as far as a working partner, one of the finest.
And he wanted like he felt that as well. He was like, he knew we'd been through the boot camp. He knew we had a tight knit group, and he was very aware of it. And said, "You know, I know you guys have got that.
Bring it on."
But I'm also, you know, I'm going to distance myself a little bit because he wasn't working with us for the first bit.
Right.
Yeah.
But then by the time we came back in, I think it's episode 3, we had scenes. We're all together, and he just lit it up. He was in control of every single one of us, regardless. Yeah. I mean, not to boss
it
a group.
It was so nice to have somebody like him on a show like this, where the material in the project means so much, and to have him kind of take the reins and go, all right, you know what? This is television. Sometimes it's hard to find the timing in television to create the performances or work within the guidelines of a script.
Yeah.
And you had somebody come in with the reputation that he has for being so damn good.
Yeah.
Yep.
And go, fuck him. You know what? You do it this way. Yeah. You want to do it this way? You do it this way. And you know what? We'll work with it and we'll get there. And you know what? You know, he turned me into a better actor. I'll tell you
absolutely
that.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Well, I love the series. 6 debuts on History Channel on Wednesday, January 18th at 10/9 Central. Guys, thanks for sitting down with me.
Thank you for having the show.
It's a pleasure.
Pleasure.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, that's the show, folks. Don't forget, when you're constantly on the go and there's no time to be running to the grocery store, let Home Chef deliver easy-to-prepare meals straight to your door. To select from tons of recipes you're guaranteed to go wild for, go to homechef.com/kickass and you'll get $30 in free meals. Go to homechef.com/kickass. Thanks again to Bill and David Broyles, Barry Sloan, Kyle Schmidt, and Edwin Hodge for joining me on the podcast today. 6 airs this Wednesday, January 18th at 10 p.m. Eastern on the History Channel. For more information, including bonus content, behind-the-scenes footage, and cast and crew interviews, visit history.com. Don't forget to take our listener survey so we can keep the show free and find advertisers who are best matched to you, our listeners. Just take 5 minutes to go to podsurvey.com/kick and take the survey. And when you're done, be sure to register for that $100 Amazon gift card giveaway. Be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on iTunes and leave us a review while you're there. You can like Kick-Ass News on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at KAPolitics. And please be sure to recommend Kick-Ass News to your friends on your social media. And if you really want to help out, then donate to our GoFundMe campaign at GoFundMe.com/KickAssNews or click on the donate button at KickAssNews.com. As always, I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@KickAssNews.com. For now, though, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.